This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 83 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we this week?
Very good, David. Doing very well. Have an exciting episode ahead of us, don't we?
We do. And we're not alone tonight. We have a guest, which is always good. It means we can do less talking this episode. So why don't you tell us a little bit about our guest?
Our guest is Mark Burns. He's the owner and operator of Burns Eye View, LLC. They're a promotion and marketing company located in Southern California, and they specialize in aerial and MOVI filming. On January 23rd of this year, 2015, Burns Eye View became only the 16th company in the United States to receive a Section 333 exemption from the FAA. And this allows Burns Eye View to fly small UAVs commercially. Now, Mark was first introduced to flying as a Marine while serving as aircrew in the back of a CH-46E helicopter in Okinawa.
Oh, come on. He served in the back of a frog.
Okay.
That's right.
On that note, Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Now, we wanted to speak with Mark because we had mentioned Burns Eye View when we talked about some of the exemptions that had been granted by the FAA. So what better way to get a real clear picture of that process and what it means and what Mark is intending to do with this exemption than to bring him on the show? So yeah, again, thanks, Mark, for joining us. Maybe we can start out by having you describe to our listeners just what kind of services Burns Eye View has been providing and expects to provide.
Yeah, sure. So originally, we started back in 2013 flying Phantom Ones for the real estate industry. And we really expanded from there, going into what we call full walkthrough tours for real estate, which includes aerial video and then also doing three-axis gimbal walkthroughs, filming the highest resolution possible to be able to capture what it feels like to actually walk through a home. The idea behind this was that when you're selling a house from the real estate angle and you're the owner of the house, every weekend it seems like you have to pack up and leave so your home can be viewed by people walking through it. And so what we decided to do was provide a digital representation of a walkthrough so the homeowner and the realtor can then show that, whether it's, you know, on YouTube, Vimeo, or any other video platform, and that will be able to allow the homeowner to clean his property once. You can get people online who can pre-qualify themselves. And if they're really interested in perhaps purchasing the property, you can make individual appointments with them. We found that this drastically improves the whole selling process and creates closings much faster than the traditional analog clean your home every other weekend.
Right. I'm sure this is something that's it's really good for all parties involved. It really, I think, as you mentioned, facilitates the viewing, the sale, the purchase process for buyers. It's great for everybody. But of course, that sort of thing is considered a commercial use of UAVs by the FAA. And so that must be why you decided to pursue this exemption under the Section 333 process.
Exactly. Like all your listeners, we've been watching this process unfold almost on the Ice Age timeline. And we kind of decided, hey, you know what? we saw the Hollywood Seven put in their exemption. And shortly after there, we decided that, hey, let's try and get in front of this, see what will happen. And I think in July, we submitted our paperwork for the exemption. And fortunately, about 6 months later, January 23rd, we got a call from my attorney that said, hey, Burns Eye View is the 16th company. And we're like, that's awesome. What does that mean?
Well, and Mark, can we backtrack just a little bit? You said the paperwork. What was that like? I mean, are we talking mounds, or did you have an attorney just do all the paperwork for you? What was that involved?
Sure. It's really actually an interesting way we met our attorney. We were on a shoot, and we were going back for B-roll to augment the video we were putting together. And we met him on the beach. We happened to be flying, and he walked up and said, hey, I'm Mike. How are you guys doing? And he's an aviation attorney, commercial pilot, and a really, really cool guy. And, you know, we kind of exchanged business cards and chatted for a little while and didn't talk for months. And then finally, when we decided to move forward with the exemption, I reached out to him and we talked with him. Well, we probably met with him three or four times, had a lot of paperwork go back and forth. He had an idea of what the wording should look like,
right,
based off of what the Hollywood Seven had put in. And he'd been working with some other clients along the way. So he was really great, knew how to speak the FAA's talk. Not being a pilot myself, that was very helpful. So he left it up to us on what we wanted to ask. And where I was coming from was, not being a pilot and having good success without being a pilot, I didn't understand the whole private or commercial pilot requirement. We weren't ever going to fly up into manned airspace. Can't get any decent images at that height anyway. Mm. So we were limiting our flights to easily below 500 feet at that point. So we put in for a ground school. We thought, okay, let's kind of make a compromise here. Let's go through FAA ground school so you can understand the airspace requirements and where commercial and private pilots are coming from and make sure we have a deconfliction there.
Is that something that you would recommend for others who are also pursuing this exemption process?
Well, the FAA has yet to give anybody just the ground school. We got a private pilot's requirement, and some I even think I have a commercial pilot's requirement on theirs. So that was a key thing for me. I didn't want to have to spend $8,000 to $10,000 to get a private pilot's license.
Sure. That's kind of a significant expense and would take an awful lot of time for you.
Absolutely. No. And I mean, you can talk into instructors, you can whiz through on 6 weeks, but that's kind of going full time. So that was one of the things we wanted to stay away from. And we wanted to be able to, you know, operate with checklists. We thought that made sense. And, you know, the battery checks made sense. A lot of the stuff that in the notice to, you know, the new notice that came out for proposed rulemaking makes a lot of sense. But the private pilot thing was just kind of...
Yeah, kind of over the...
Yeah. So that was a key thing. We submitted the paperwork with that in mind. Also, the N number, asked for a requirement to get away from the N number and registering that, because that's an additional paperwork process and time frame. But when it came back to us, Dave, to answer your questions, pretty much they had the FAA had established where they wanted to draw the line, and we got a pretty good deal. But the line was still, the bar was much higher than we wanted it to be.
After the paperwork was submitted to the FAA, was there a back and forth at all, or was it just a matter of submit the paperwork and then just wait?
We submitted the paperwork, and then 30 days later, in fact, I have the notice right here on August 20th, we got a letter from Jake Troutman, who said, we've received your request for an exemption, and we are processing it. We then heard back from them the end of November, asking for clarification on some areas, wanting to know more about, because we kind of submitted a generic, we weren't registering any aircraft, we weren't saying what aircraft we were flying, we just kind of wanted, hey, this is, we want to be able to fly, doesn't matter what we want to fly, but we want to be able to fly. So they wanted to know what aircraft we wanted to fly. We put in there a DJI Phantom 2 and an S-1000 from DJI as well. Mm-hmm. When it came back, we only got approval for the Phantom.
Oh, interesting. Did they offer any explanation as to why just that model?
No, they didn't, which we asked them, and we've actually gone back to them and said, because there's amendment process, which they notified us with the exemption when it came through. So that week we turned around and said, okay, we'd like to amend our exemption. We respectfully request to add the Inspire 1. And as previously requested in our exemption, we'd also like the S1000. Mm-hmm. And so that was about 3-4 weeks ago. So we're hoping to hear back from them shortly on a yay or nay. Right now, I've got to have a pilot with me to fly my Phantom.
So other than the length of time for all this processing, how would you describe the relationship with the FAA? Was it a pleasant experience or a difficult one? How would you characterize it?
I think the people at the FAA are probably really good people. I haven't met them in person, but every phone call that I've had with them, they sound like your average American who wants to do right. I think they're caught up in a lot of politics. I think they're being pulled from different industries who have different perspectives on this, and they're trying to cut a line that makes everybody happy. Unfortunately, I think it's taking longer than it needs to, and they kind of got involved in areas that they didn't need to get involved with, because I mean, we've had RC around for 40 years, 30 years, and people have been operating very safely. And as soon as this word commercial got thrown in, it kind of started a ball rolling downhill that in the FAA's mind that I think just they didn't need to go that direction, but they did. We had the Perker case. The FAA really seemed like they came out and they wanted to nail Perker, and they however, the process from the one NTSB judge saying this case has no merit to getting appealed, and then all of a sudden everything's an aircraft and the FAA can regulate national airspace in our backyards, really kind of, I think, I'm sure you've talked about, really made things,
sure.
Yeah. You know, we scratch our heads about it. So then the exemption came through and we're like, great, we've got this exemption. What does it mean? So to answer your question, the people at the FAA have been great here at the local FSDO, talking to people in Oklahoma. I think they're just caught in a paperwork and political arena that they can only do so much.
So have you actually begun flights under the exemption, or are you still in the process of kind of gearing up for that?
No, and that's the big thing with the exemption. The exemption is very, very strict, and we're having to register our craft. We're working through the COA process and making sure that we're operating completely within the exemption. It takes several months. In fact, a company, Aerial MOB or Aerial Mob, they're one of the Hollywood Seven. They were they got interviewed and said, yeah, we had to shut down operations for 60 days to comply. So it's a very difficult process to go through from a small business aspect, because I can't operate commercially, which means I still have bills that I have to pay, but I can't have income come in. So it's a little disappointing in that regard. We want to make sure that we're flying safely. We want to make sure that we're flying under the exemption. The challenge that I have is I have this exemption. I'm going to have to spend roughly $15,000 to comply, but the FAA said there's no enforcement capability they have. So at the moment, you have an exemption. We're kind of like in the slow lane on the freeway right now. If you have an exemption, where there's people operating in the fast lane doing commercial shoots right now, and there's no enforcement. So where we're coming from is, do you operate under the exemption and risk losing your business, or do you not operate under an exemption and say, really, there's no enforcement mechanism, we need to keep paying bills? So that's kind of where we are at the moment.
Yeah, that's a tough spot, Mark, because we certainly do see many, many examples of other companies that are, you know, taking the strategy, the easy way out, or at least in the short term, the easy way out of just going ahead and flying their missions.
Exactly. And the exemption is a medium to long term benefit, but the short term, you know, you can't watch a commercial where you're not seeing some aerial, and you know that none of those people have operated on the exemption. And I'm getting calls now from companies that want us to operate, but essentially, my joke is we're exempted from doing business. That's what the exemptions provide us. So I have to turn down jobs because I can't risk losing the exemption. And what happens is, the people who are calling me, they don't care. They just want to get the shot. So
sure.
There's plenty of other guys who are flying, whether they're flying large heavy-duty rigs or Phantoms that are flying under the radar. So eventually it's going to work out for us. We're just trying to figure out what's the best way to proceed at the moment.
Yeah. And you have some pretty impressive plans for the future and how you can expand in this area, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Right now we're looking at TV and commercial and films. We have a lot of good friends up in the Hollywood area who, you know, they don't have exemptions, but they're flying. And so we're trying to work in that we can help those companies get, quote, legal. We also, in our exemption, we put some fun wording that I was excited about, flying in national parks. There's a whole avenue right now of the kind of a border or territory war between the national parks and the FAA, and that the national parks have restricted flying in the national parks and up to 2,000 feet AGL. However, they don't control that airspace. So we've actually had some good conversations with the National Park Service on helping them establish some rules and being able to be a conduit to facilitate people who want to fly aerial shots within the national parks, but do it in a way that makes sense and that's safe. So we're looking forward to developing that relationship further and helping out the national parks, because their mission is to preserve the environment and to protect the wildlife there and not to disturb them. So
sure.
I think there's a way to do that. I think there's a proper way to do that. And we hope that we can help the national parks with that.
Huh.
Also in our exemption, we talked about, we asked for the wording on inspections. And I'm actually very excited about this area with the developments in lightweight infrared thermal and EO cameras. There is some great opportunities to do inspections, whether it's structural inspections, whether it's biomass and livestock inspections, or just for an insurance aspect, that we'd really like to help the industries move in a way that can decrease costs and mitigate fraud. We think this is a really, really fun area to get involved in, and we're looking to develop a franchise model for people across the country. Because right now where we've been working is the real estate, and out here in San Diego, Orange County, and LA, the real estate's pretty pricey. But you get to back to the middle of the country, and you know the average home's about $200,000-$300,000, and you're not going to be able to make a living making films off of those. So we think from the inspection route that's a second income stream that can really help help flyers make money. And sporting events, we've gotten some calls from representatives of Major League Baseball on how we can work within the stadiums. Now, it's kind of a very dicey area.
Sure.
But we think there's an opportunity there, especially with baseball, not so much football because they're using the spider cams. But with baseball, they can't use the spider cams because of the foul ball it's issue. And, you know, the ball can go pretty much anywhere. And
yes.
And you just can't have the spider cam, but what we can be able to do is help promote and sell airtime from flying an Inspire around. So we're looking forward to pursuing those. So a lot of neat areas to look into, the challenges operating within the exemption.
And so when you talk about a sort of a franchising a strategy like that, so then you would be looking for people or organizations that can provide the piloting skills and business skills necessary to grow that kind of a business.
Absolutely. What are the requirements of our exemption? And it's going to be a requirement, whether it's at the state level or FAA level, is documenting flight time. Now, I don't know anybody out there who is flying with a logbook right now. And so what people who are listening need to understand is that you need to start documenting your flights and how much time you're putting on your craft. And what that's going to do is going to demonstrate to companies that, hey, you've got the time, you've got the experience, and you know how to maintain your craft. Document your maintenance. You know, you change out a motor, you change out props. Just write that down, you know, write down how many hours you think was on the motor, the reasons behind why you pulled it off, and just start keeping, you know, maintenance logs so that when the opportunity does come up that we can franchise or any other company wants to hire you, you can say, hey, look, I've got 120 hours on this with this type of craft. I've got three crafts. I know how to maintain them, and I'm safe to fly. The other aspect on that is from the UAS insurance, they want to know that you can fly safely, and that you have experience with the craft. So that's another requirement when we got our aviation insurance, that they wanted to know about us. And that's really a key thing. That I think the biggest thing that the FAA's not talking about is a liability aspect of proving that you're a safe flyer outside of paperwork. And what I mean by that is the insurance aspect. Because you know, there's guys that are following checklists, there's guys that have business liability, but business liability will not cover damage from your craft, either to people or property. And so what people really need to start thinking about is, how am I going to get covered in case I have a voltage failure? This comes out of the sky and it's either hits somebody or, you know, crashes through someone's backyard, because it's going to be a concern. And I really hope that people are really starting looking into that.
Yeah, you need to have that kind of documentation. Otherwise, David, what's the alternative in terms of insurance? You're just in a pool that includes the average of everybody, including the folks that don't have any skills.
You're not really asking me to talk about my life's profession, are you?
I thought I'd work that in.
Yeah, because, you know, I really can't discuss this. I can't. Well, let me say this. It's gonna be an interesting way to figure out, like, what Mark said.
Yep.
That being said, I advise you to go talk to your local insurance agent and explain everything, and do not use what I've just said as advice.
Okay.
You're going to have that disclaimer.
That disclaimer.
But Mark, I think we should sneak in some news. I mean, the big news this week, Max, was Paris and UAVs flying all over the place at night. Mark, we'll give you first crack at this. What do you think of something like that?
Sounds like a rumor to me.
It's kind of an amazing situation for those listeners who maybe haven't been following this as closely as we all have. There have been these drones, a number of them, and they've been spotted over these Paris landmarks, the Eiffel Tower.
Is there photographic evidence of this?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't see any specific evidence like that in the news reports.
No, but there's multiple witnesses and multiple say. Well, it is kind of really bizarre that you have high value sites like the Eiffel Tower and the U.S. Embassy, and multiple people reporting it, including police officers saying we saw them, but they haven't been able to track down the people doing it. And I didn't see anything today that over the last, it was the last two nights, but last night, we're recording this on Thursday, the 26th, they didn't see anything. It's just, it's really kind of frightening. And of course, every article in the United States about this, it brings up the crash of the Phantom at the White House.
Hmm.
My perspective is, if I wanted to get night shots and I wanted to do it in one night, sounds like whoever did it, that's what I'd do. And then I packed up and I moved on. That's, I think, one avenue. I think if someone's worried about from a security aspect, why would you increase the threat level with your presence in collecting whatever they were collecting? It seems bizarre. I think there's this sensitivity that, you know, RC is this terrible thing and you can put a 3-pound payload and hurt somebody. Well, it's much easier to go out there in the traditional methods and hurt somebody. I just really don't. I'm not concerned. If Paris wants to really do something, have an RC blocker and don't let anybody fly.
Yeah, it's the big effect in some ways is how this impacts the public perception of drones, let's say. And it kind of feeds into sort of this a fear, this privacy fear, the security fear, the safety fear, all those kinds of things. It just sort of feeds into that. It's not helped by the fact that last year there were a number of other sightings in France that were never really explained, including a bunch of flights over a French nuclear reactor. You know, when people read about those things, they think the worst, and it doesn't help build a positive perception.
Yeah, and the other thing, I mean, we talked about this earlier, but let's not call them drones. My word, and hopefully your listeners will pick up on this, is we're looking at a small unmanned aerial vehicle. And so that's an SUAV. And let's make the word SWAVs. These are SWAVs. And what we are SWAV operators. And that's how we need to think of ourselves. We're sophisticated, we're safe, and we can answer questions without feeling like we're doing something wrong. We're good Americans.
Right.
We're respecting privacy. We're not flying in places where we shouldn't be flying. If you can't walk there, don't fly there. And I think a lot of these concerns are going to go away. I mean, you're going to have the operator that's going to be a knucklehead and, you know, fly too close to somebody, but that's not the commercial pilot. The commercial pilot wants to get the shot, be exposed as little as possible to any variables, land, and then move on to the next job. And that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Mark, some people say that the NPRM isn't going to prevent the knuckleheads, as we say, from doing stupid things. But maybe one way to look at it is, well, the NPRM, the rules, the regulations that the FAA is trying to establish are really not directed at the casual knuckleheads. It's directed at the commercial operators. And that's kind of, a different class of operator.
Paperwork doesn't stop anybody from doing anything. That's really what people need to understand. These are products you can buy online or in a store. You can fly them without a license. The hobbyist or commercial guy is not going to be restricted by a piece of paper from Washington, D.C. Hmm. The enforcement of whatever the FAA decides is going to be the key factor here. And I think really where that's going to come down to is at the state level. And I think the states, if they're very concerned about what's going on with people acting inappropriately, they need to start regulating these. And that's going to really develop where these rules are going to go, whether it's that the state police can issue citations for operating unsafely. I think that's probably the best avenue, and that's where the enforcement's going to be. But until the FAA develops a drone police squad, the paperwork's not going to control anybody.
So we see regulation at the federal level. We see, or we talk about enforcement maybe at the local level. But in between, we keep seeing examples of regulations at the local level. And just this past week, we see that the Rhode Island lawmakers, that they want to regulate both commercial and recreational drones to the point where they would have to be registered with the Department of Public Safety. They talk about operation limited near airports, near military, government buildings, and schools, and also that it would be illegal to take pictures or videos of a private building without permission. And I don't know that Rhode Island or any other state has the authority to to regulate the airspace in this way. But we see states doing this all over in response to, you know, their constituents are a little bit afraid.
California has what's called an anti-paparazzi law that got passed in October out here. Mm. And essentially it says that your borders of your property extend up regardless of how high the physical fence or hedge goes. And so the idea was that you can't take pictures of people who don't want to have their picture taken on their own property. I think that makes a lot of sense. It comes down to, are they really going to enforce these laws that they're passing, and how are they going to do that? I think.
Yeah, I guess my perspective is when you talk about like the paparazzi issue, is that legislation should describe what's allowable, what's not in terms of invasion of privacy and those kinds of issues. And it shouldn't be technology specific. You shouldn't have a drone law that deals with paparazzi, another Nikon or Canon camera law that deals with digital photographs taken with handheld devices
I think all Canon cameras should be banned, being a Nikon fan. But did I say that out loud? I'm sorry.
Yes, you did.
Agreed. And that's, how our Constitution was written. It was written in broad concepts, which cover the minutiae. I think where we get into trouble is when we try passing laws that we can't enforce. I think if I were to be a lawmaker for a day, I think what would be reasonable is if you are going to purchase one of these, you have to tie it to a driver's license. So at the checkout counter or online, you have to put in your driver's license number, and that's then identifying that you're the owner through the DMV, and that if there's any ever an issue, if it crashes, that they can trace that back to you and that you're going to be then liable. I think that what that will do is say, hey, there's an accountability. I think that's a good first step. I think also there needs to be some way to cover the insurance aspect on this, because if people don't understand that these are tools, but they're very sharp tools if they come down on you. I mean, you talk about an S1000 that it's, you know, weighing upwards of fully loaded 15 pounds. You're going to really hurt somebody if not operating. Now, obviously, you're going to put out 12 grand for it, and that's not every operator, but there has to be some way, and it can be a tiered level of, okay, if you fly a Phantom, you've got to pay a permit at the state level to operate your Phantom, and then you have to prove that you have insurance, a lot like how we do automobiles.
Mark, tell me what you see your future is. What milestones you have to go over, and, you know, where do you see yourself in 2 years?
I see Burns Eye View as a well-valued company that provides photographic services to people in the real estate industry and at the commercial level that operates with safe pilots, is accountable, and is not looking to be a fly-by-night company. We want to be an established company that follows the rules. I think the FAA notice to proposed rulemaking is a great start in making sure that companies like ours are operating effectively. I think the enforcement is going to be the issue. And I certainly hope that there's not a knee-jerk reaction to whether it's the Phantom crash at the White House or anything that might happen in the next 6 months that limits the opportunities that this technology can have in making society better and not being used for bad, but for the good of society, and to help increase whether it's sales of real estate or making crops more efficient and being able to target, I shouldn't say target.
I got in trouble for that word last time, I think.
Being able to be efficient with whatever industry, whether it's in the industrial chemical industry, whether it's in agriculture, or whether it's simply surveying or helping with search and rescue. There's a lot of great opportunities. We're very excited about the future. And we just want people to know that we're trying to operate within the rules. They're very restrictive. We're looking forward to an opening up of the rules and our safe conduct. So there is one thing I'd like to add along the lines of documenting flights. There's a company called Skyward, SKYWARD, that we've been working with. If you go to their website, they have and go to their contact page, put in your information, they will contact you and they will help you set up a way to have a digital logbook so you can start tracking your flights and your hours and your maintenance, so that when you do want to work with, whether it's our company or another company, you can show them all the work you've done, and it's going to be a great way to document what you're doing. So looking forward to that.
Is that skyward.io?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good. Yeah, we'll take a look at that site, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Mark, before we ask you to tell our listeners how they can find Burns Eye View online, just really quickly, we got I guess this was a Facebook post, David, from a listener, Matthew, and this may be a good question, actually, for maybe you can address this. He's looking to take his aerial cinematography to the next level. He's looking for guidance on things like how do you tell the story with video, composition, color grading, camera movement, all those kinds of aspects to the, you know, the craft of aerial cinematography. And he's looking for where do you go to learn those kind of things? Do you have any advice or anything that you could pass along to Matthew?
Yeah, Matt, great question. Where I would go, I'd start on YouTube and No Film School channel. So it's No Film School is the name of the channel. And they're going to have a lot of great information for you. And the idea is that there's so much you can learn on YouTube or Vimeo I'd start there, put in a YouTube search of what you're looking for, and then start subscribing to those YouTube channels, and you'll be able to generate an education very quickly. Outside of going to college or going to the community college to get a school or hiring an artist, I think that's a, you do that for 30 days, 60 days, and you're going to have a really great start. What we normally use with our editing is we use Final Cut Pro X and Motion 5. And for pictures, we'll use Adobe and Lightroom. So those are some good software options to start looking into.
And how about the cameras? What are you hanging underneath your Phantom?
So, yeah, that's a great point. So on our Phantom, we're using a GoPro Hero 4 Black, and we're working with a company called Rage Cams, R-A-G-E-C-A-M-S. And they modify the lens from a stock lens to pretty much any millimeter lens you want. So we can screw in a wide angle or screw in a tighter angle shot. And what that does is allows us to get rid of all the fisheye physically, so we don't have to change it in post-production. And we get really great shots. So that's what we're using on our Phantom. We're also looking forward to flying our Lumix GH4 with our S1000.
Yes. Just quickly, Mark, maybe you can tell us about the relationship you have with the manufacturers. Do you talk to them at all, or do you just buy their products and not have much dialogue?
We originally just talked to them. We originally got our Phantom through DSLR Pros. They're based out of Florida. They've been really great with their customer service, and we found that there's a lot of vendors who are just fantastic. As far as DJI goes, they're a great company at making aerial rigs, and they just haven't solved the customer service side. And so we've been working with them and trying to figure out how best we can work together as an exempted company. And that's a process that's we're still working on. But we are looking forward to working with other manufacturers, particularly ones here in the United States that understand the U.S. culture and what U.S. Americans are looking for in a customer service aerial company.
All right. And Mark, finally, tell our listeners where they can find Burns Eye View online.
Sure. Real easy. My name is Mark Burns, and our company is Burns Eye View. That's Burns with a Z. So BURNZEYEVIEW.com. And on the site, you can see work we've done. You can see where we price our products, which will give you a good opportunity to understand the market we're in and perhaps how your market can benefit from our services and expanding with us. So thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate you reaching out to us and looking forward to staying in contact and letting you know how the exemption process works out now that we're on the other side of the fence here. And any of your listeners can feel free to reach out and say hi and ask any questions, whether on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, or just email me at office, O-F-F-I-C-E, at burnseyeview.com.
All right, fantastic. Thanks again for joining us. So we want to thank all of you for listening to episode 83 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. And if you'd like to go straight to the show notes for this episode, that's at the UAVDigest.com/83. And David, where else can folks find us online?
Well, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook at Facebook/UAV Digest. And of course, you can stream us to your phone on Stitcher.com. And if you love us, please go to Apple iTunes and leave a review so other people can find us and our little show. And of course, if you'd like to help our show, you can become a patron at patreon.com/the UAV Digest. And you can buy some swag at cafepress.com/the UAV Digest. Both the last two, the swag and a patron, you can also go to our homepage and click on the links. So with that, Max, I guess this is another wrap. Again, we'd like to thank Mark Burns from Burns Eye View for being on the show with us tonight. So with that, it's David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.